You're listening to Program Notes for the Florida Orchestra's Huff Family Foundation Masterwork Series. I'm Andy Tefelski, Social Media Manager of the Florida Orchestra, classically trained percussionist, and the host of this podcast. In this episode, I will be talking about Hector Berlioz's Roman Carnival Overture, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante, and Antonin Dvorak's New World Symphony, so you can dive deeper into the music anytime, anywhere. These audio program notes are authored by Kurt Loft, a local writer and former music critic. You can find his full transcriptions at floridaorchestra.org. All right, let's dive in. Hector Berlioz, 1803 to 1869, Roman Carnival Overture, Opus 9, performance duration approximately 8 minutes. To say Hector Berlioz wore his heart on his sleeve would be an understatement. Music for the eccentric French composer was not an objective art with rules and scaffolding of notes, but an extension of his emotions and fantasies. To hear a work by Berlioz is to be immersed in autobiography. Berlioz once said, quote, "Which of the two powers, love or music, can elevate man to the most sublime heights? Why separate them? They are two wings of the soul." Berlioz was a mercurial, blunt, passionate, and determined idealist. Had he chosen painting instead of composing, his canvases would quiver with pigment. His personality makes itself known in a single bar of music, undeniable and quickly etched in the mind. His skill as an orchestrator, penchant for vivid colorings, affinity for soaring literary subjects, and an overactive imagination all made Berlioz not only a giant of 19th century music, but among the more fascinating artists in any field. Everything for Berlioz was big. His colossal Requiem, Te Deum, and 5-hour Litoyen require such large forces they are seldom performed, if for production cost alone. He wrote no significant chamber music. This may have been as much hardwired egocentrism as a reflection of the era, notes the musicologist Jan Swafford. Quote, "It was an age when artists were expected to be excessive, profligate, on the edge of sanity." In other words, Berlioz's personality and self-consciousness were symptomatic of his time. Berlioz fueled much of his thinking with literature, and by the time he entered the Paris Conservatory at age 22, he had immersed himself in the works of Virgil, Shakespeare, Goethe, and Sir Walter Scott. From books, Berlioz fashioned his music as program, as opposed to absolute or abstract music, and each of his creations tells a vivid and imaginative story. This is the case with his Roman Carnival Overture, intended to open the second act of the ill-fated opera Benvenuto Cellini. The English horn plays an arioso-like theme in the first section, followed by the orchestra depicting a carnival and a lively Italian dance known as the saltarello. This is full-throttled music, virtuosic and splashy. Just listen to the brass bellow, and remains one of the composer's finest examples of orchestration. Berlioz conducted the premiere of the 8-minute work in Paris in 1844, but with only one rehearsal to get things in order without his woodwind players, who were away on National Guard duty. When they returned for the first performance, they had to read the music sight unseen. Everyone apparently did a good job, as the audience insisted on a repeat performance as an encore. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, 1756 to 1791. Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat for violin and viola. Performance duration approximately 30 minutes. What can be said of Mozart that hasn't been said 1,000 times over? So much has been written about this precocious wunderkind, the effortless style of many of his 626 published compositions, the perfection of his operas, late symphonies, and piano concertos, and his tragic death at age 35, that anything more seems redundant. We can all agree, however, that Mozart was an innate musician who absorbed, analyzed, and created art with uncanny ease and profound humanity. His vulnerability also reminds us that he was not a musical god, but a mortal. The question is, what mortal could compose the Sinfonia Concertante, a blend of symphony and concerto that weds two sweetly matched string instruments? At age 23, Mozart imagined the work only a few years after completing his 5 concertos for violin, so his new creation might be thought of as a 6th, but a double concerto. It also is surprisingly mature in its abundance and treatment of musical material. The opening movement, marked Maestoso, begins with a 2-minute orchestral introduction, almost like the overture to an opera. This is important because the development throughout is symphonic, organic, and bursting with arioso-like phrasing. Violin and viola might be center stage, but but every instrument etches its own individual voice. The middle section is alleged to be a tribute to his mother, who died in Paris while accompanying her son on tour. TFL music director Michael Francis says, quote, "It's a conversation where Mozart says farewell to his mother. Something incredible happens here." This is among the composer's most eloquent and expressive moments, and a true dialogue dipped in grief between the soloists. All sadness vanishes in the presto finale, a return to good spirits with violin and viola voicing into the highest register as they weave their lines in and around the orchestra. So typical of Mozart, he responds to darkness with a ray of light. Antonin Dvorak, 1841-1904, Symphony No. 9 in E minor, Opus 95, from The New World. Performance duration approximately 40 minutes. Any music lover who happened to be in New York City in December of 1893 no doubt craved a ticket to Carnegie Hall, which opened with great fanfare 2 years earlier. The famed bohemian composer Antonin Dvorak was in town for an occasion of special significance. The world premiere of his Symphony No. 9, composed on American soil and aptly titled From the New World. Dvorak was a musician of major status, even Brahms praised his work, and his 7th and 8th symphonies had become repertoire standards, as they remain today. But the 9th was special. Dvorak's confidence and artistic skills were at their peak, and he found inspiration, not literal replication, in African-American spiritual songs. These spirituals can be the foundation of a serious and original school of composition to be developed in the United States, Dvorak wrote. These beautiful and varied themes are the product of the soil. They are the folk songs of America, and your composers must turn to them. Dvorak served as head of the National Conservatory of Music in New York for 3 years, and during this time felt he should express an American sentiment. While he never directly quoted Native American tunes, he turned to Henry Thacker Burley, an African American student at the National Conservatory, who sang to the composer indigenous spirituals and Southern plantation songs. In his 2005 book, Classical Music in America, A History of Its Rise and Fall, Joseph Horowitz notes how the Ninth is distinctly American in flavor, yet at the same time, manifestly European. This was, of course, an astounding feat, coming from a composer so deeply rooted in Slavic idioms. The premiere of the Ninth also prompted one of the most elaborate music reviews in the history of newspapers, a 3,000-word essay by the eminent critic William J. Henderson, who raised the question of whether the symphony was in the least bit American. The composer and critic Virgil Thompson, in a 1950 review for the New York Herald Tribune, called the symphony the work of a European landscape painter charmed by American subjects, and praised it as intrinsically tender and imaginative. Dvorak cast the Ninth in the standard four movements of the Romantic era symphony, although some have accused him of a patchwork style that merely strings together enchanting tunes. What they failed to understand is the power and momentum the composer lends to themes fueled by an extroverted self-assurance. From the start, the music grabs listeners and nearly pulls them from their seats. The closing tune of the exposition, as you might agree, is similar to the old spiritual Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. The largo that follows features a sumptuous solo for the English horn and introduces the famous reference to going home. A rollicking scherzo, which mimics a rhythmic figure from the scherzo of Beethoven's own Ninth, raises the blood pressure, much like one of Dvorak's Slavonic dances, and sets the stage for a thrilling finale. To create unity, Dvorak brings together earlier themes and charges them with a relentless rhythmic pulse that culminates in one of the most memorable climaxes in music. Thank you for listening to Soundwaves with the Florida Orchestra. Enjoy the concert.